owner, the runner in the night, blinded by the light. She got down, but she never got touched. She's gonna make it to the night. She's gonna make it through the night.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, Maul returns to complete his dangerous plan, and the Ghost crew is caught in the middle. There will be touching holocrons, Padawan hugs, and Maul sees him. We're talking holocrons of fate this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
That's good. We had a, well, those are, well, but we had a nice week off and had a little brain break, so I was getting a little podcast burned out, so.
Yeah, we did like 3 2-hour shows in a row, 2-hour plus shows in a row.
I needed a week to like not do podcasts after that. So.
Well, we're back to regular sized episodes now, at least.
Yeah. So. Did you do anything fun? You were telling me about my doppelganger.
Yeah, I met Hope's doppelganger. Lives on a farm and has blue hair.
It may or may not be polyamorous.
May or may not be polyamorous. It looked like pretty much it was a yes, though.
I could be down for the punk gay farmer life. That sounds like me.
That's pretty much what it was. There was a kid. There was a daughter in the mix, too, but I didn't see the daughter. There's like a little girl that lives there, too. So your doppelganger has a little girl and dozens and dozens and dozens of farm animals.
Yeah, I had a pretty good week. I just been working, doing the normal thing, trying to just hustle in life and not die. And, you know,
Hope's a hustler.
I am a hustler.
All the girls that I work with all saw Hustler, and now they're
It's so good. It's so good.
They're all rethinking their lives after it.
Jennifer Lopez and Constant Wu needs fucking rewards. That movie.
Just like, why are we wasting our time on this job?
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those movies that, like, okay, I hope it's gonna give a quick review of Hustler, I guess. For one, it's really artistically done. It's not like a fun stripper movie like Magic Mike. Because, like, Magic Mike was, like, a fun stripper movie with, like, a little bit of drama. Like, this movie is a drama first, just with strippers. And it's based on a true story. And, like, my favorite part about it is, like, almost the end, all the music is classical music. Like, all the interludes are, like, classical music, which took me by surprise. But also, like, the entire thing is done from the female gaze, which is very interesting. So, like, there are, you can actually see, like, the dynamics of power play. Like, there's a scene where Constant Wu's character is on her knees giving a lap dance, and the camera's down there with her, so like you're actually looking up at the guy, and it's so interestingly done. And also has Julia Stiles in it, and I love Julia Stiles since the 90s. Like 10 Things I Hate About You, I've been a fan of Julia Stiles ever since, and I didn't know she was in the movie. And she was amazing! And it has probably one of the best cameos ever that was kept secret for so long. But, like, go see Hustlers. Like, it's really good.
Sounds like a Robin Hood story, which...
Well, it's based on a true story.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think we're gonna see a string. My prediction is we'll see a string of robbing from the rich to give to the poor, or give to yourself.
Yeah.
In the near future.
And something it does a really good job of is that it it does a really good job showing all the women's, like, why they were doing what they were doing, but it never makes them heroes, you know? So it's, the movie is very well aware that drugging men and taking their money is wrong.
Unethical.
Yeah, but they also do a really good job, like, framing, like, why they do it. Like, why they, like, it makes sure it shows their kids and it shows, like, their sick parents and stuff. Like, it shows them why they were doing this. So it's just really wonderfully done. Please go see Hustlers. It's amazing. It actually might not be in theaters anymore, but so try and see it.
It's probably in the cheap theaters now. It's probably in the dollar theaters or whatever they are now, or the $3 theaters or however they run it now.
They run it these days.
I'll happily always take a movie in the female gaze. So, but Holocron's a fate. So anyway, Holocron's a fate.
I'm ready.
Holocrons of Fate is the 40th episode of Star Wars Rebels. How have we gotten to 40 so fast? God, Rebels is just flying by. And it was released on October 1st, 2016. It was written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. The droids that accompany Maul are hacked and reprogrammed droids from Mandalore, a relic of the time he was ruler of that planet. They had been designed for the Clone Wars series based on rickshaw droids seen in Episode 2 of Attack of the Clones. The asteroid belt where Maul is operating out of was first seen in the Son of Dathomir comics. It had been designed for unproduced episode of Clone Wars. In the Rebels recon for this episode, they talk about how Ezra and Kanan are still going through the aftermath of the Season 2 finale. Ezra feels responsible for Kanan's injuries and tries to protect him. This episode is Ezra realizing that Kanan doesn't need protection. They also talk about the importance of forgiveness. They also talk about how Ezra's temptation of the dark side and why he doesn't slide into it as much. He has a loving support system of family that's around him. Dave Filoni stated that he felt that Anakin Skywalker's downfall was because Anakin wasn't evil, but because of the Jedi's lack of compassion, being so selfless that the Jedi forgot to care. This differs from Ezra, as someone who has the space family caring for him. They talk about how this plays into Ezra's favor, as he doesn't fully trust Maul. He can't trick the dark side, but he can see through Maul to a degree. And finally, they also talk about how Maul isn't trying to be a Sith Lord anymore. He's trying to create something else of his own creation. He wants to factor Ezra into that legacy. Dun, 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 dun. I don't know how to talk today.
Oh, excellent. Well, you got a lot of reading.
Yeah, it was really short. Amusing. I don't have too terribly much for this episode. This was an episode that didn't, like, fully grab me.
Yeah, it's not a bad episode by any stretch of the imagination, but it's sort of a return to, like, you know, not as, I mean, we're definitely getting a continuing storyline with through arc with Darth Maul and stuff, but it's still a kind of episodic episode, you know. It's episodic with a bunch of the new characters that are in play in it, but it's sort of indicative of standalone episodes to come.
Yeah, but, like, for me, like, I made the note a couple times that the writing's just not that tight in this episode. Like, things are completely glossed over. Like, how did Maul get the ghost? And we see at the beginning, like, there's a damaged rebel ship, so, like, we can assume that, like, the ghost was on a mission and that they got attacked by Maul. But it's all very kind of unclear.
Yeah.
It makes the audience do the work to put the pieces together. Does that make sense? And I'm not saying, like, I want
that's
them to...
That's okay, play. Yeah. I guess it's not important to the story, what they're dealing with in the story. That's not, like, an important question to answer in it. So, and, you know, like, they can just do the shorthand of...
I don't want them to hold my hand, but, like, they've just done it better before, like, setting up these kind of stories. You know, like, it's just one of those things, like... This is fine and it's good and they don't need to hold my hand and give me, like, everything. But, like, they've just done this better before, you know? Mm-hmm. That's really what it is. And so, like, just the episode just didn't feel as tight. Like, where Maul was fascinating and like just absolutely fascinating to me, and like Twilight of the Apprentice, and like even later on in the season, like he's a fascinating character. Like this, he just feels a little evil TM, like very one dimensional.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know. I like this episode, but it's not as strong. So, you know who I like, who is strong?
Strong like bull.
Strong in the force you are.
Yes.
Not strong in other ways, though.
Yoda ate his Wheaties this morning.
You're the strongest frog I know.
Ah.
Ah.
Ribbit.
How you doing this week?
Pretty good.
Do anything fun?
Always.
Oh,
you're always having fun.
Did you go on a hot date?
Oh. Hot date with Mrs. Hand and her three sisters. Yoda only has three fingers.
So I was like staring at my hand, trying to figure this out. Like, wait a second. Ew, Yoda masturbates. Hey, Yoda.
No,
that bad. Question this week?
Oh, question for Yoda? Yes.
Yes.
It answers all questions.
The question this week comes from our friend. Ooh yeah, Mr. Paul C. Kelly. And the question for you is, Yoda, what's your favorite number and why?
Paul Kelly knows. That's why Paul Kelly asked.
Pretty sure. Does it start with a 6?
69, dude!
I was like, this could go three different ways. He could answer it very seriously and be boring. It's going to be a 69, I'm pretty sure. Or it's going to be 42.
Yoda met two time travelers. Yes, told him about the number 69, dude.
Oh, I'm actually very excited for the Bill and Ted movie. The new one with the daughters.
Movie? What is movie?
Yoda, like
that's not what movie is.
Like a hollow net. It's kind of like when you're watching the hollow net.
Okay.
But I also thought you were going to go in the direction of 42. So I had that saved up as well.
Yoda does not waste time on hollow net like space millennials, always with nose and hollow net.
Yeah, Anakin, that's what happened. The TV rotted your brain.
Hollow net rotted Anakin's brain. Brain is rotten.
All right, Yoda, well, I will see you next week.
Too much reality space TV.
Space Kardashians.
There he goes.
Bye.
Yoda's a grumpy old space boomer.
All right, so, holocrons abate.
I'm ready for it.
Act one.
Uno, acto.
Wish the sun was not on my screen because it's making it hard to read. All right, here we go. Act 1. We open with Kanan and Ezra on some sort of mission for the rebels because they're conveniently not on the Ghost. Ezra is wondering where the Sith holocron is because he's a dark side addict now, and for plot reasons, just to remind the audience that this is still a thing happening in the show. That's an example of stuff. Like, Ezra like has moved on past the holocron. He's fine, and all of a sudden out of nowhere he's just like, where's the holocron, Kanan? Like, that's an example of, like, the writing not being as tight.
Wouldn't happen to have a little of that holocron laying around, would you?
Yeah, maybe it just feels like a long time for me because, like, the holocron was settled just last episode, but we haven't recorded in 2 weeks, so maybe it just feels like a long time to me.
Well, we were also like, Ezra got over the holocron really quick, but maybe he didn't.
Yeah, that's true. That's a valid point, because I was saying, I did say that last episode, so now I'm a fucking hypocrite. Yeah.
I said it too, so we're living in Hypocritesylvania.
Yeah, Hypocritesylvania. Anyway. Ezra wants to use the Sith holocron to try and learn more secrets. There's a plane flying overhead. I don't know if you can hear it. To try and learn more secrets, but Kanan shuts that down real fast. And Ezra asks, why then did Yoda send them to Malachor? Kanan said that they had a chance to beat the Sith, and they failed. They come out of hyperspace and see the transport that they were supposed to meet up with or something, and it has been destroyed. And they dock with the vessel to check it out. On board, they find a little droid hanging out over an injured rebel guy. The rebel guy warns them that someone with red blades was looking for Ezra, and that also the ghost is in danger. Bum bum bum. And Space Dad and Son run back to the other ship to call Hera. When Space Mode pops up on their screen, Space Dad is like, "Oh, thank God! Ezra, tell me if she's beautiful. I bet she looks great. Tell me, what do her titties look like?" And Ezra's just like, "Ew." And Hera breaks in like, "Husband, shut up for 2 seconds. We have a problem." And Hera gets shoved out of the frame, and Kanan hears a terrible voice. Maul has the rest of the ghost crew, and Kanan's just like, "I hate that guy." And Maul is like, "Hey!" And Ezra goes, "Don't you hey me! Hey is for horses, and you're an ass! You betrayed me!" And Maul's like, semantics, but whatever. You got that Sith holocron that our apprentice picked up on Malachor. If you don't bring it to me, I'm going to totally kill off all your friends. See? Look, I have them all here tied up as my prisoners." And Maul, Vanna, White's showcases them so the ghost crew can see them and they all see each other. I butchered that sentence, it's fine. And he quickly adds, "Oh, and bring me your Jedi holocron too." And Kanan grits his teeth and agrees to it. Why did Maul have to ask for it if it was on the ghost the entire fucking time? Anyway. Over on the ghost, Maul is doing a reverse Lando from season 1 as he's looking at Sabine's artwork. Where Lando was admiring the work, Maul is getting information from it. He realizes that the ghost is their home, not just some transport ship. The rest of the space family is together as Maul has some droids with blasters pointed at them in the background. Maul wants Hera to show them around and points his lightsaber, and Zeb is like, "Don't you point that thing at my space mom, even though I'm older than her." I looked it up, Zeb's like in his 40s. Hera's like 28. But she's everyone's space mom. And Maul looks at Sabine and goes, "You of all people should totally trust me, boo. You're a Mandalorian, and I used to be your king or whatever." And Sabine is like, "First of all, I'm not your boo. Second of all, fuck off. You sucked as a king." And then Maul leads Hera away down a hallway where he's trying to deduce where Kanan's room is. Zeb and Ezra's room smells like fuzzy hormones, so that's not it. Sabine's room is far too colorful, but the next room is sparse and bare, like how a Jedi would keep it. Maul asks Hera where the holocron is, but when Hera says that she barely even knows Kanan, Maul looks at the screen like it's an episode of The Office and then looks back at her and says, "Come on, it's clear that you're space married. Knock that shit off." And Maul then uses the Force to dive into Hera's mind to see it was her idea to bring Ezra in, and finds in Hera's mind where the holocron is hidden. What'd you think of Act 1?
Not bad. I agree that the writing's a little thin. I thought the Maul part where he was going from room to room was kind of reminded me a little bit of the Three Bears, where it's just like, oh.
I actually really love that scene, because not for Maul. Well, also for Maul, because he's clearly trying to deduce which.
Well, it's like an outsider looking at the, you know, assessing the space family, you know?
And that's where I kind of like it, too, because you see how each of their rooms are different. And plus his line of, like, walking to Zeb's room going, "That is a curious smell." Like, I love that line. It's so funny, because it's so out of left field. Like, you're not expecting a villain to be like, "Oh, my God, that is
a curious smell." Yeah, because a gorilla and a pubescent teenager live in the room, of course it would smell. The whole ship should smell, because ships aren't made for it would be like everybody living in a camper, you know. It would probably get a little funky in there. I don't know, like, if they have space deodorizers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Ezra puts on Space Axe and just like gasses out everybody. Ugh. Axe body spray is the worst.
I had two notes. They were both cultural references that turned up in here, but one of them isn't up, I jumped the gun. It isn't up until the next part. Actually, both of them are both in the next part. I thought I had this part run into where they met the Bendu. So what I'm saying, Hope, is I really don't have any notes for this. When I was watching it, I was like, I was watching it and going like, I haven't written anything down yet. You know, I was thinking about that in the part where, you know, Darth Maul was getting his tour through the ship. I'm like, I haven't written anything down yet. And it's like, things are happening, but nothing really noteworthy was happening. You know,
yeah.
it was just sort of straight story establishment sort of stuff. So, yeah. So I have a lot more notes now for part two.
The majority of my notes are in Act Two too, because honestly, the stuff with Bindu, Ezra, and Kanan is the most interesting part of this episode.
Yes, and when we get to the scoring part, I'll be noting that.
So I just realized as I was reading it, I meant to note this and I didn't. I'm glad that they brought up that Maul ruled Mandalore. That's a nice callback to Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember just now as I was watching this, and I'm
glad... It also cements it in canon.
Yeah, but I'm also glad that they, that Sabine was keeping very close to her chest about her feelings about that, because I forgot about it when I was watching the episode, but I remembered it as I was reading the outline. Sabine's mom worked for Maul. She was part of Death Watch. And... I think, like, if Maul knew that, like, he'd be trying to, like, prey on Sabine. Or at least trying to find out about her family then. Because,
right.
Like, oh, your mother was one of my loyalists. Like, he might not be at Sabine, but, like, he could probably get allies through her family. So now that I think
about that, if he heard her last name, he'd probably be able to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. So that was actually pretty smart of Sabine, like, kind of playing that close to her chest, too, knowing that her mom used to work for this man. And I don't have a note it, but I just realized it as I was reading it. That's a very interesting character beat, because, and very mature of her on that part. So, I've already said two of my lines with the writing being pretty thin and Maul going into Zeb's room. I love Zeb, by the way. Like, he is just trying to be so protective of the two women. And, like, when Maul points his lightsaber at Hera, like, he's the first one to go, like, don't touch her! And, like, trying to struggle his way out of the things.
Well, you were saying, I had this thought when you were saying, well, Zeb's older than her. And then I was thinking, but, you know, who knows how Lasat mature, you know? He could still be an angry, you know, teenager in the development of Lasat's. He could still be, you know, very, very young, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And hot-headed. But I don't know. In Star Wars, it tends to be if you're like Chewbacca, like a Wookiee or Zeb is sort of a, you know, gorilla-ish creature that you're a little more aggressive, you know? They make them a little more animalistic, which means they're like, they're more prone to like, just knee-jerk violent reaction towards something, you know?
Yeah, I whipped out my Rebels visual guide. This is season one, so a year has passed plus 6 months. So Hera would be about 26, and Zeb is 39 at the beginning of Rebels. So he'd be like 41 now? So
yeah, he might not mature till he's like 100 years old, you know?
Yeah. So that's according to the Star... I've now actually, like, ever since I bought the Star Wars visual guide, like, I'm glad I picked this up when I was in Raleigh, because I've used it, like, 3 times now in episodes. It just stays on my desk now, so... But, granted... Well, anyway, so... But yeah, I love Zeb. Like, the moment that, either of them are threatened, he's just, like, trying to... He kind of reminds me of, like, a cat trying to get out of a cone. Like,
yes.
When we had a cone, poor Carmilla, when she tore her ACL, like, she would just, like, lay on the floor and just, like, roll around trying to get the cone off. And that's what it reminds me when he's in binders.
Hey, if he was, like, the family dog and they had a chain on him and somebody kicked his master, he'd be just like, you know, on the chain.
Yeah. My only other note, and I actually think this is a very valid point, because I started thinking back to it, and it's a good point. Like, why did Yoda send them to Malachor? Like, what were they supposed to do? Because Kanan interprets as they were supposed to beat the Sith and they failed. But I kind of think it was to set all this in motion, because Yoda
knows it might be all about stirring the pot up, and it, you know, I mean, the thing is, you know, spoilers coming, you know, this sets Maul on his course to Obi-Wan.
Yeah. So
he might be doing it because it's important for Obi-Wan to close this, you know, circle. And so, or you know, there's a variety of things that happen because they go there. And
it also, it removes Ahsoka from the timeline of the original trilogy. And because, she was on Malachor until season 4, and to our knowledge, she was still stuck on Malachor post season 4. We don't know when or how she got off.
I mean, people talk about three-dimensional chess, but Yoda really plays three-dimensional chess, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, when anything like that happens in the Force, you can always, if you want to get lazy about it, just go Force butterfly effect, you know. There's, who knows what it might have had to do with, like all this happening, and it dislodges one rock that trips somebody down the line that was going to do something bad, or and they fall down and crack their head open or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But if Yoda's playing like three-dimensional chess, I think Bendu's playing like 18-dimensional chess.
Yeah.
In some ways.
I'm trying to remember if the Sith Holocron comes back after this episode. Hold on, I'm looking it up. It comes back in two more episodes. I forgot that it was in those episodes. But yeah, like, I think that's a very valid point. I don't think that Kanan is correct in his answer, because he says we were sent to destroy the Sith and we failed. I don't think that's the answer. I think the answer is to set all of this in motion, which is what Yoda needed them to do, because this set Maul free, which sent him to Obi-Wan. This took Ahsoka out of play for the rest of the original trilogy. They got the Sith Holocron that's going to come into effect in two other episodes. I don't remember what it does. I just had to Google it right past. But, I mean, I think Kanan's actually wrong. I do think there is a lesson of failure in that there was a thing. And if they happened to have taken out by Darth Vader in the process, Yoda would have probably been cool with that.
Yeah. So, maybe it isn't all about them. That's, you know, maybe it wasn't about them doing much of anything. It's maybe it was just about their participation in it. Yeah.
It's not about you, Kanan. Get over yourself. But yeah, I mean, I thought that was a very valid point that Ezra brought up. Like, what was the point? So
open your eyes, Kate. Oh, sorry.
I love blind jokes. One of my favorite parts of watching Avatar The Last Airbender is there is a character named Toph, and she's blind, and she makes all the blind jokes, and they're
great. We're going to get into that in part two, I think, here.
Yeah.
Is it in part two, or is it in part three? Oh, no, it's in part three, but there's a good blind joke in here. There's
Where Maul's like, follow the sound of my voice, like a dick.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Yeah, but, yeah.
Anyway, Act 2?
Act 2, where all my notes lie.
Kanan and Ezra arrive at Bindu's house, but the big Force guy isn't there. Ezra puts down a sensor marker to protect against the googly-eyed spiders, but Bindu yoinks that thing right up the moment they turn their backs to it and snaps it in half. But not seeing Bindu, the spiders come rushing out of their homes. Ezra has not had the Zen walk with the spiders, so he starts panicking. Kanan tries to talk Ezra through how to cope with the spiders, but Ezra is too focused on trying to protect Kanan. And then Bindu strolls up and the spiders flee. And Ezra's eyes are so big and he whispers, Space Dad? Those rocks turned into a cow dinosaur thing? And I'm not sure if we're in reality anymore. And Kanan asks for the Sith Holocron, and Bindu is like, you gave me that, man! No take-backsies! And they explain to Bindu that Maul has their family, and that the Darksider also needs Kanan's Holocron, too. Oh! Says Bindu when he realizes what's up, and he says, that Maul guy is going to bring together the knowledge Dragon Balls, and he's going to summon some great piece of knowledge with them. And Ezra's like, that's great. Where's the holocron? And Bundu looks at Kanan like, man, this kid is pushy. And Kanan's like, huh, you don't have to live with them. Bundu points out that it seems that Kanan and Ezra don't agree on the holocron, and that they are imbalanced, and there's imbalance with their relationship. Kanan can hear the holocron, but Ezra wants to go in alone. Kanan takes Ezra's lightsaber so Ezra doesn't spook the spiders with it. And as Ezra descends into the spider cave, Bundu whispers, hey, that's some good parenting there. And Kanan gives his thumb up dad seal of approval. Why didn't Kanan just go in? Oh, anyway. Back with the ghost crew. Maul is pulling at the holocron, trying to get the holocron to open. He's running it under hot water, he's using rubber gloves on it to get a better grip, and he's smacking it on the kitchen counter, but he can't get the Jedi holocron to open. So the space family decide to make his day real bad. With Maul distracted, they pull a mutiny on their bots and knock them all out. Chopper frees them from their cuffs and they sneak to a lower level. When Maul follows them below, Chopper magnetizes the ceiling and Maul gets stuck to the roof, and the space family attacks! But it doesn't last too long. This isn't Maul's first mutiny. He quickly frees himself, knocks out Zeb with a box, force chokes Sabine, and throws her body into Hera's body, regaining control of the ghost once again. Back with Ezra and Kanan, Ezra is panicking with the spiders moving all around them, and he breaks his comm link. Not being able to talk to his space son, Kanan heads in there after them. And Bindu's like, don't get eaten, or I'm gonna keep your lightsabers! Kanan hurries in there and pulls Ezra out of harm's way. He shows Ezra how his powers have been different since Malachor, and he calms the spiders. Kanan starts to lead the way, and Ezra brings up what's been bugging him this entire time. He apologizes to Kanan for everything that happened on Malachor. And Kanan grips his shoulder and tells his son that he never once blamed Ezra for any of that. And it's time for Ezra to forgive himself. And then Ezra and Kanan hug each other. And Kanan hugs his space son. And this is why they are healthy Jedi. Fuck you, Wet Blanket Windu and Yoda and the rest of the Jedi of old. This is how you properly Jedi. You hug your children. And outside, Bindu's like, yes, he did it. Yay, Bundu! Kanan and Ezra find the holocron sitting on top of a spider. They gently use the force to guide the holocron back over to them. Kanan keeps Ezra calm, and they get the holocron back. Rejoining Bundu outside, he is like, hi! You didn't get eaten! That's good! Just be careful with that dark side guy. He's gonna try and trick you guys again. He's like, I believe in you, but also, when you put the holocrons together, if you hear a female voice say that the answer of life is 42, you're in the wrong franchise. Bye! What'd you think of Act 2?
Well, Bendu would know about being in the wrong franchise.
That's true.
Being Doctor Who and all. Okay, now all my notes. I got a lot of them. All right, there's two other cross-cultural references. One of them is the second time it's happened, and the other one is just weird as hell. And the first one is Ezra calls the pole that repels the spiders his thumper. The thumper. What happened to the thumper? And that's what that's a word from Dune. And this is another Dune reference.
That's right. I actually, that was in the show notes. Not the show notes, but that was on StarWars.com, and I didn't put it in.
And, you're right. a thumper was actually sort of, it looked the same as their thing, but it had the opposite effect as these ones, where it called it would attract sandworms by making a thumping noise that would attract them because they'd think there was food. So that was interesting. And the other one is Bender does a Woody Woodpecker laugh. He basically goes, ha 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 ha. But in a nice, slow Tom Baker way. Yeah, in Tom Baker voice. It's bizarre.
I love every time that Bindu laughs. It's just great. Because he also laughs at just, like, funny things. He's like, you'll make it or you won't. Ha, 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 ha. And I'm like,
Well, I like it because we're going to see a different side of Bendu, but right now we're in this, like, he's just amused by all of this. So he's just like, yeah, sure, you know, I'll go along with this. This is fun. I'm bored. But he mentions a vergence, which, you know, of the two holocrons coming, you know, the dark and light holocrons coming together as a vergence, which is also the word they use to describe Anakin's virgin birth. They were like, you know, when he was like, he has no son, they're like, so you really think this is a vergence? So that would mean that Anakin was some sort of creation, I guess, if it fits with this, is some product of the dark and the light side being put together, which kind of makes sense. I liked your description of Maul trying to open up the Jedi holocron.
Like a jar of pickles?
Except to me, visually, it totally looked like somebody getting totally pissed off at their Rubik's Cube.
I know. Sitting there
trying to solve their Rubik's Cube and just being like, oh, god damn it.
I actually went back and forth between like a puzzle or a jar of pickles. Like, I actually mused about that for about a few minutes before I was like, jar of pickles.
And there was a scene, totally an H.R. Giger-like scene, where Ezra was totally in a vagina cave. It was a total vagina cave. I was just like, oh, man. Now we're in alien territory here. He shines his light right on it, and Kanan's like, no, go right. And it's like, oh, no, go left, Ezra. Oh, my God, it's giant. Anyway. That's my notes for part two.
Anyway. My first note, let me get all my... I'll just go straight down. I like the moment when Ezra puts on the thumper, and the moment they turn her away, you see it, like, Bindu's hand just shoot out and just pluck it out of the ground.
Yeah.
It's so nice. I started realizing this episode that Ezra has really nice progression when it comes to both force beings and animals. Because we started off in season one where he's learning how to use the force to connect with animals. And we saw that power growing in season two with things like the Purrgil. And now here, he's meeting Bindu. And now Bindu is not an animal. He's a force being, but he's also not human. He's very organic and he's with the force. And these are nice kind of step-ups, because he steps up with a Lothcad, then he goes up to the Purrgil, and now he's meeting Bindu. So by the time we get to season four, he can recognize when something's a force being. Like, he looks at the Lothwolves and he goes, that's a force thing. Because he's had all these kind of step-up progressions throughout the show where he can look at a Lothwolf and go, I need to go to that, because that's a thing. I need to do that. And so it's nice how we've seen him, like, progress slowly throughout the seasons, and he's stepping up to where he's, after they lose Kanan, he's the one that's in charge of that. And he's like, Kanan's gone. These are my wolves now. This is my pack. But it's just a very nice character and story progression, as they started off with him having trouble connecting with a Lothcat to going to where he can look at a Lothwolf and go, this is a force thing. Let's go.
Which he's going to have to do a lot in the future.
Yeah. So, I like that Kanan takes Ezra's lightsaber, and makes him go into the cave unarmed, because story-wise, we know that Ezra's been in the dark side the last 6 months. He's pretty much been punching his way through problems. We saw that in the season opener when he, in the opening of the season opener, where he pretty much just like punched his way through a bunch of stormtroopers and then used the force to kill them. So I like that moment where Kanan made him leave his lightsaber and is making him kind of come back to the light side and making him relearn how to problem solve as a Jedi. So
and
that was
he's passing on what Bendu just taught him too.
Yeah. So.
But in his own way, like in a different way, because Bendu was doing it through, you know, Kanan's sightlessness, and Kanan had to take a different tact with Ezra. He basically just took away his. You know how they say if the only tool you have is a lightsaber, then you're just going to use it on everything. Then Everything else becomes something to use a lightsaber on. I don't know. I was trying to do the hammer and nail analogy, but it doesn't work with lightsabers. But you take the lightsaber away, and that basically puts Ezra in the same position Kanan was in having, but Ezra has a little bit of an extra advantage over Kanan with that, with his affinity with living natural creatures. Although
he struggled with the spiders,
but that's, you know, that makes it probably more, a more important lesson. But Kanan, basically it's kind of cool because there's just like a progression from Bendu to Kanan to Ezra in this one. And Ezra has to do a little reverse, you know, Kanan just had to like learn to trust and let go of Ezra. And Ezra had to, is having to do the same thing with Kanan now, you know?
Yeah. So, I like that most droids have little faces on them.
Mm-hmm.
They just have, like, little sad faces or happy faces. Like the one that had the happy face when it's holding the gun. Like, it's so cute. And, like, when they were upset, they got little angry faces on it. And it reminds me, those droids remind me of something. And I can't put my finger on what. And I was going to toss
it. There's a toy. Because what? There's a toy. There's a toy out there where they're almost like the Tamagotchis where, you know, you have to... It's like a little toy robot, and it's got a little LED face on it.
Yeah.
Happy or sad, and that's probably what they're reminding you of. And I didn't think about that till you were just describing them.
And then, like, they also remind me a little bit of Saga. There's a comic, which is an amazing comic, called Saga, but there's a species of people who have TV heads, and they make, like, They flash images of their TV heads of what they're feeling. And there's this one guy who makes, like, happy faces or sad faces and stuff. But, yes, you're right. It's that toy. I think that is that toy that it reminded me of. Because, like, every time I saw them, I was just shaking my head going, these remind me of something, and I don't know what, but it's hitting something in my brain, and I don't know what it is. So... I like Maul's little, the space family's little plan of, like, magnetizing Maul's feet, but too bad they're fighting an ex-Sith Lord, so that only goes so far.
Yeah, not only an ex-Sith Lord, but the leader of a planet. So he didn't just fall off the space pumpkin truck.
Yeah, and well, they don't know, but actually we know now also two crime groups, because he led the Shadow Collective, and he's also led Crimson Dawn. So this
is like Maul's, El Chapo or something.
Yeah, like this isn't Maul's first rodeo, but it also shows like how scary Maul is compared to them. Like that moment where he picks up Sabine and force choking her, like that's a scary moment. And then he just like chunks Sabine into Hera's body. Like
he's a way better heavy than the Inquisitors were.
Yeah.
The Inquisitors could have been great heavies, but. He totally works more as a heavy and is way more interesting, at least as written in Rebels.
Well, it does kind of remind me of Hera's line last season when Hera says to Sabine and Zeb, we have to get used to not having the Jedi around. And this was one of those moments I was just like, this would be so different if there was a Jedi there.
Yeah. Sure would have helped to have the Jedi around right now. And they end up do being around.
Yeah. I like Bindu's line of perhaps master and apprentice will find their balance, or perhaps they will be eaten. I just like that line. It made me laugh.
And you know, if they got eaten, he would have been like, huh, I like those guys. Anyway,
yeah. And then he would
on with Benduing.
And then he would have picked up their lightsabers and like played with them for like 2 hours and then went back to sleep. Like that's just Bindu. Okay, here's another thing about writing. I don't know why Kanan didn't go with Ezra in the first place. Like, why didn't he?
Yeah, they were doing the, like, oh, well, you have to do this alone and something. But it ended up not being, they could have dropped it and it didn't lead to anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and because, like, when I was watching Rebels Recon, they said that a big point of this episode is Ezra realizing that he doesn't have to protect Kanan, but they did that anyway, like with Kanan getting in there. Like, they could have done it anyway, just, I don't know, like, it's just been, the writing's a little off this episode. Like, even if Kanan went in there in the first place, they could have still had that point of, like, Ezra constantly trying to protect him, and Kanan just being like, I don't need you to protect me, kid, I'm fine. Like, they just, I don't know. All the writing was...
Yeah, see, it might be, like, a lot of, it, like, the editing of it. They might have, like, had, like, you know, it's, sometimes it seems like, you know, and that's the process, you know, when we were talking to George Kurstick about it is, you know, somebody will write an episode and then it goes sort of into a writer's room type of thing. It'll get written, rewritten, stuff will get taken out, put in, changed because they're going to do something later on. So, you know, there might have been a lot of different things happening that got cut out in this or whatever it that just make it, you know, it might have, whatever they were doing before with the story, it might have worked better to have, there might have been more backup scenes of why it was necessary to let Ezra go in alone at first, and then that all got changed and stuff. But yeah, it's yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you on that. It's kind of a, you know, a little squishy storytelling.
Though, I do like it because it does give Kanan a chance to show how the forces change. But again, like, they could have done that, like, in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I love the moment where Ezra finally decides to forgive himself. I was recently listening to Lousy Beautiful Town, and they were talking about forgiveness, and they were talking about the concept of, like, Leia and Vader, and after Anakin, you know, Vader turned back into Anakin and stuff like that, and they, one of them is a psychiatrist, and she was talking about how forgiveness is for the victim, it's not for the person that hurt you.
Right.
When you choose to forgive somebody, it's so you can help heal.
And sometimes you're forgiving someone who's not even in this world anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and so if somebody forgives you, it's for themselves, not for you. And so I think that's a really interesting thing, because Ezra really was just as much of a victim of all this, and he was holding on to all this because he was Maul's victim, and everybody got hurt because he was Maul's victim. So it's not just... It's Ezra forgiving himself in that moment so he can start to heal. And it's really nicely done. And I've also noticed, like, so far in the season that happened last week when he was falling down the, when the, like, the Imperial thing was falling, and then, mm-hmm. like, Kanan came to rescue him in the ghost. And then again here in the scene where Kanan is standing in the light and Ezra is in the shadows, there's a lot of scenes so far this season that where they have Kanan in light and Ezra standing in shadows, and Ezra has to physically step into light with Kanan as they're, like, getting over these hurdles. And there's just so many, like, nice visuals of that. And I actually posted that on Twitter. And somebody said that so far, like, this season, they're also using the Force theme for Kanan.
How about this irony? Kanan is, now that Kanan is, so to speak, in the dark, he's more in the light.
Yeah. So there's just so many great visuals, so many good musical cues just to help tell the story of, like, Kanan constantly standing in light and Ezra's in shadows and he's having to physically walk into light with him. So there's just, so far this season's been doing really good with those kind of visuals. And I just wanted to note this, like, the first time I watched Rebels, like, I thought Bindu was fine and kind of, like, a cool addition, but, like, this second time through, I'm really enjoying Bindu. Like, I'm finding him more and more fascinating.
I love him.
Yeah, he's definitely a character for a rewatch, because there's just, like, little things here and there that I kind of, like, glossed over with Bindu that I just kind of, like, didn't really delve into. But now that I'm, like, rewatching this, like... He really is such a middle walker. I just love the line of him just being like, they're going to find balance or they're going to die.
He's a glimpse into the Force in sort of, you know, there's, like, the Force as it exists in reality, you know, in the physical terms, a little bit like Jedi and Sith and stuff. And then there's the, like, Force writ large, like, inside a Jedi temple, or, you know, when you're meditating and you see, you know, visions and stuff of the huge picture. And there's the Bendu sort of somewhere in between the two of those, you know, probably on, like, a larger scale than, say, Yoda or something. So he's like insight into someone who knows more than probably anybody we've met in Star Wars, but at the same time, he's so huge in it that he's not like dispensing an awful lot of wisdom. He's almost like more an observer that, you know, he interacts if it's amusing for him, you know.
Yeah.
Or it's amusing to him because he knows that he's getting a little interaction into the larger scale of the Jedi stuff or whatever. But it's just fun to watch him because he's just so enjoying it so much, and in a way that you don't really know why or how he's enjoying it, but he is, and it just adds a lot of depth. I love the character of Bendu. Wet blanket Bendu.
But that's kind of the fun thing about him too. Oh gosh, you said it. You said something very specific, and it stuck in my brain, and then it left.
Oh.
Yes, I'll just say yes because I don't remember the point I was trying to make. oh gosh. Yeah. Yes. Remember
love that Bendu.
Love the Bendu.
The Bendu is my Grievy for Rebels.
He's your Grievy.
He's my Grievy stand-in for Rebels. I'm always from the point Bendu started in. I'm waiting for Bendu every episode. More Bendu.
Hmm. That's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
All right. You want to wrap this puppy up in plastic and bury it in the ground?
No, I want to wrap it up in a cute little bow and, like, put it in a box with the air holes and food and then, like, give it to somebody. Give the puppy to somebody. We're going to wrap it nicely.
Okay. We'll do it this time.
Sadistic asshole.
Well, we're running out of puppies, so...
You're the one that before the episode was like, I went to a farm and there were dogs, Hope. There were 6 dogs.
I know. That's 6 episodes that we can wrap that of puppies to wrap up. They were puppies. Some of them would put up a fight, I think, but.
My doppelganger's not going to appreciate you taking
no.
My
dogs. No.
All right. Act 3.
Act 3.
We don't endorse
no animal cruelty
puppies.
In Jay Guys and Jedi.
Yeah. No animals were harmed in the making of this episode.
Not even the bug on Hope's window.
Except, yeah, I don't see it anymore, so I think I flicked it off, so. Act 3. On the flight back to meet up with Maul, Ezra has the Sith holocron. And Kanan tells him that he's been wanting the holocron like an addict, and now Ezra has it. And Kanan gives him the chance to use the thing. But Ezra chooses not to open it, and he gives it back to Kanan. And do you know what that's called? Growth. Kanan wants to play all this.
Oh my god, Hope. I'm sorry I have to cut in. But, like, I'm, like, was sort of reading along with you. And, like, my brain missaw that last statement. And it said, do you know what that's called? Goth. And I'm like, what? The hell does that mean? Oh, growth. Yes, okay.
Growth, not goth.
Ezra's finally becoming a goth, like Anakin.
Ezra's moving out of his blackberry phase. He's turning more back into a blueberry. So, Kanan wants to play this all by ear, which surprises Ezra. But Kanan knows that Maul will play on the fear that he has their friends. They need to keep it cool and not do anything crazy. And it's like the spiders all over again, which is fitting because Maul was once a Spider-Man and not the cool Peter Parker kind of thing. They come out of hyperspace in an asteroid field where Maul has his base, and it's gorgeous. His base is so pretty in the asteroid field, and it's built into, I don't even know what that ring is. It's just like a ring of stone. There's like no planet there. It's just a ring of stone with asteroids everywhere. I don't know, but it's so pretty. Maul comes out to meet them in the hangar, and he's like, hey, Kanan, follow my voice, because I blinded you last episode, or 2 episodes ago. Hey, remember when I blinded you 6 months ago? Hey! And Kanan sighs, but he keeps his cool. And Maul has his droids take Ezra to the command center, while spewing all the cliches of, no funny business or your friends are gonna die. And Kanan follows Maul to what he believes is his friends. That's a note of, like, I had to rewatch that scene, like, two or three times because of the writing there. Because Maul doesn't dictate who he's talking to. He just goes, I will take you to your friends. And then Ezra starts walking, and he goes, take him to the command center. So it took me a second to realize that he was telling Kanan that he was going to take him to his friends, because Maul doesn't dictate who he's talking to. And I was very confused for like 30 seconds what was happening. Like, that's an example of writing. Like, that's not going well in this episode, because it just was not clear that I had to figure out, like, oh, he's taking Kanan to the quote-unquote friends while Ezra's going off. It's just very weird. Anyway. Maul tries to talk nice with Kanan, going, you know, I wasn't trying to blind you. It was an accident. And Kanan's like, oh, that's so sweet that you were trying to kill me instead and didn't. Thanks. And then Maul shoves Kanan into an airlock and blows him out into space.
Let's yes, in. Correct. Correct. Blows him out into space. Correct.
You've taught me well. I've actually now, when I'm listening to other Star Wars podcasts and they say suck out into space, I go, blown! You're blown into space! But Kanan pulls a Leia from The Last Jedi and uses the Force and some vacuum jumping skills to get back into the hangar. Maul comes into the command center to meet with Ezra and whispers to the droid to terminate the other prisoners. And then he strolls up to Ezra going, your friends are safe! Nothing bad is about to happen to them. Hooray! Let's touch our holocrons together. Ew. Ew! Why did I, like, make finger guns and, like, point and, like, shake my hips at you? I don't know. You guys couldn't see
it. Docking procedure. They're...
You guys can't see it. I close myself out. They sit together, and Maul is surprised that Ezra knows about the whole asking a single question to get all the answers thing. And Ezra says he wants to destroy the Sith. Maul says that he's looking for hope. They close eyes, open their holocrons, and start a laser light show. Pew 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 pew! Back on the Ghost, the droid.
I'll bet you wish it was the Grande who was doing this with Ezra and he was looking for hope. Mmm.
No, Grande and Thrawn were doing this and they were both looking for hope together. Anyway. Back on the Ghost, the droid comes back and tells the other two to kill the space family. And it's actually really sad because they all, the Hera and Sabine and Zeb, closes their eyes and they wince, and it's actually kind of morbid.
It's creepy. They really think they're just like, well, this is it. And they're shot from, but like a lot of them are shot from behind and you can just see their bodies just sort of tense up. It's pretty morbid.
Yeah. But thankfully, Kanan springs in there and cups up the droids before they can do anything, and he frees them all. Woo! Space family. Maul is growing in despair? What did I write there? He's getting desperate because he can't see anything. But Ezra starts to see something in all the light, and the space family runs in there, but they're blinded by the light, and it's too bright for everyone to see, everyone who has working eyes. And through the Force, Kanan can see Ezra and Maul, and he goes on in there. Kanan tells Ezra to look away from the light and remember what Bindu's said, and remember Bindu's warning. But they both see what they're looking for. Maul can see where... I'm just going to spoil this now. Maul can see where Obi-Wan is, and Ezra sees twin sons. The holocrons then blow everyone back, and Maul escapes out of there like the cockroach he is, cackling because now he knows that he lives. They come back to Ezra and make sure he's okay. Ezra says he saw all sorts of images and places and people, but he wasn't sure if it was what he wanted to see or what Maul wanted to see. And Kanan says that they'll all figure it out together. The end!
You know, I was almost going to say, yeah, you almost don't even have to say spoiler warning because everybody should know as soon as he says twin sons that it's about Obi-Wan, but then I thought about it for half a second, and I was like, it could have meant Luke, too, I guess.
Yeah.
It could have definitely, he could have, especially since he seems to be looking for some sort of Padawan, so it could have meant Luke, too, so I guess it wasn't definitely an Obi-Wan reference at this point.
Yeah, and just remember, guys, like, we're watching Rebels from the point of view of people who have already seen the show.
Yeah.
So there's going to be spoilers for later seasons.
All right. So, best blind line. When Ezra goes, well, I look relaxed.
Oh, I know.
He delivered that line. That line was worthy of Han Solo in Empire Strikes Back. That was the way it was. The way it was set up and delivered, and his delivery of it was just hilarious. It's great blind joke.
Taylor Gray has been really good as Ezra this season. All two episodes of it.
Like, Kanan basically had, when the holocron's going, Kanan basically has Daredevil vision. It looks like from the first attempt at the Daredevil movie, with his blind vision. And I guess holocrons also become sort of like a space genie when you touch them together and you can, like, get a wish granted. I love that, oh my god, getting way ahead of something in The Last Jedi, because the way Kanan flies through space to get back in the ship is visually very much like Leia.
I have that note too.
They probably referenced this episode to be like, what would it look like if somebody was force pulling themselves through space for that? So maybe that scene, if I don't know, I didn't remember this when I saw Last Jedi from when I'd watched it the first time, because it was just one thing that happened. And now with hindsight looking at it, it's like, damn, if they didn't know they were going to do that with Leia, then at least when they did do that with Leia, they probably said, hey, you know, we did that in Rebels. Let's go see what that looks like, so you can sort of get an idea of what it looks like to pull yourself through space with the Force. So I thought that was really cool.
I have that note too, so I'm going to go ahead and say mine. Like, this is where it gets me, like, where people who like Rebels get pissed off about Last Jedi, because this is the second time this season they've done two Last Jedi things mm-hmm. that pissed people off. The first one was Luke cutting himself off from the Force and not being into it. Kanan did that in the last episode. Here, he layered himself back onto the ship. Kanan did that this last episode. So, like, why is... I don't understand. Because I've heard a lot of... Like, I've seen it. Like, people love Rebels, but some of these people hate Last Jedi when they're doing the exact same things. Like, be consistent if you're going to hate something. Because, like, it just bothers me, and
also something they might not like I was saying, like, the first time I watched through Rebels, I didn't remember Kanan cutting himself off from the Force or flying through space in Last Jedi.
I did remember the flying through space thing. I just couldn't remember where it was. I knew he had done it though, but I just couldn't remember where it was in the show.
I did not put the two things together at all till afterwards. And I mean, it's probably meant more like that for that. It wasn't meant to be consciously picked up, which means there's a lot more thought being put into this stuff than people are attributing to it. There's a lot more writing and effort going into it. I only have one more note, and that's that I love how Maul's robots are subtly fucked up after their beating from the space family. Their screens are, like, some of them, their screens are, like, distorted and sagging like they had a stroke, and some of them, their screens are flickering a little bit.
Oh, where they?
And they have little wincy eyes and stuff, but they got beat up, and they're like...
Talking about when they got beat up in Act 2.
That's what I'm saying. When the space family beat them up the first time, and then in Act 3, when they're, you know, leading them around, their screens are flickering on and off a little bit, and they have lines on their screens, and, like, one of them, the screen is literally like the screen is messed up to where half his face is sagging and stuff. It's great. It's subtle, but it's there, and it's just like, you know, it's basically like seeing the henchmen with black eyes and stuff.
I missed that. That's interesting. I'll have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, it's very subtle, but it's awesome. Because I was just like, hey, these guys, they beat the shit out of these guys. And then I saw one of their screens go, burp, burp. And I'm like, yeah, they're messed up. If they really wanted to, like, call attention to it, they could have, like, had a couple sparks coming out of their neck or something like that. But they kept it real, just... on the down low. Is a nice little touch. That's all I got for Act 3.
So, the whole thing with the spiders is, when you're scared of the spiders, they know how to play against you. And it's the exact same thing with Maul. Because they're scared that Maul has their friends, he knows how to play against them. Mm-hmm. So that's the point that Kanan was trying to make of, like, this is just like the spiders. Like, we can't let Maul, our fear, give our fear over to Maul so he can use it against us. So right. I thought that was a very nice. And then also Maul used to be a Spider-Man at one point, so I laughed. Something I would have actually liked to have seen, when Kanan gets blown out into space, I almost would have liked it to be silent. Like, no sound, no music, and just have it be like this. Because, like, the music's very dramatic. Like, he gets blown out into space, and it's just like, dun, 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 dun. He jumps, and it's like, dun, 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 dun. But how cool would have been if he was just like, and he got blown out into space, and then it's just silent.
Yeah. Yeah, until he
gets back on. Like, that would have actually just been a really cool moment. I wish they would have done that a little differently. Because I actually watched that scene a couple times, too, because I was making notes and going back, and then I was just like, the music's almost taking away from, like, the tension, almost, because it's just so dramatic. Overly dramatic, if not. Okay, so... I'll use my two other small notes and then go back to my big one. I also love that when we have moments of great force, Kanan can see. Like, the force is strong with the holocrons, and he can see Ezra's through it. And then when he's using the force in his dying scene, he can see Hera again. So I like these little nods that, like, in moments of great force, like, Kanan can actually see things. I think that's a really cool thing with his character.
Mm-hmm.
And my last small note is, which is something I've been saying this whole time, Act 2 is the most solid of the writing. Maul comes off just a little bit evil TM, but there's just something off about this episode the whole way through writing-wise.
He's very Disney villain. They're making him very, like, ooh.
Yeah, and
like
we know that he's not.
Disney snake, you know? Yeah,
and we know that he's not. Like, he's not an evil Disney villain. Like, right. Like the point where, like, I thought about this, and I almost noted it, and I didn't. But he tells the droid to kill the rest of the ghost crew, and then he turns to Ezra and goes, your friends are safe. And it's just one of those things of, like, if this had played out more and if the ghost crew had died, this wouldn't have turned Ezra into your favor, man.
No,
like,
not
this,
at all.
Like, unless you're trying to, like, do the Sith thing and to prey on his fear and anger, but this would just make you not have him more. If, like, if you're really trying to get Ezra as your Padawan, you're not playing it well. And I feel like Maul's smarter than that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, and, like, this isn't, like, clone, I don't know, there's just something off. Okay, let's talk about Twin Sons and Hope, which was my big note of this act. So, I actually really like Maul's answer that he's looking for Hope. And I kind of interpreted that more as a reason to live. And, because, like, the Hope has multiple meanings there. Like, for one, like, Maul's just looking for something. Like, he's looking for a reason to live. And part of that is Obi-Wan. And Obi-Wan is the entire point. Like, we talked about it, oh, God, way back in Clone Wars when we were doing the Maul-Obi-Wan episodes. And how I think it might have been the episode that Satine died. But I know we were referencing that Rebels in that episode. I kind of wish I listened to that beforehand. But remember when we had that really, really, really good talk about Obi-Wan and Maul and their journey together and how great Obi-Wan was and how he was forgiving Maul constantly and Maul was turning down his forgiveness the whole time? It's kind of coming into play to here. And I'm wondering if that's coming back. Like, Maul's realizing that, like, he needs a reason to live to go on because he's lost everything so much. And, like, knowing that Obi-Wan is alive... And it's kind of the whole, like, the addict thing that Ezra's going through with the dark side. Like, Maul's a dark side addict. Like, he needs a reason to keep going, and
he needs closure with Obi-Wan.
And it could go, like, he could be seeking out Obi-Wan for forgiveness and for healing and stuff like that, but he's falling back into that dark side trap of, like, I just need something to hunt. And it's just a choice of his character. Like, he could be looking for Obi-Wan for closure, but then we get Twin Sons, and we know that's not true. But that's
well, he's an evil character. His idea of Hope, it's like, you know, it's like if you have, like, say if you have the, I guess a fear isn't a good analogy, but I'm going to use it anyway because that's all I can think of off the top of my head, but you, let's say you're scared of flying, so you go face your fear by, you know, taking a flight, a short flight, and then a longer flight and stuff. He's facing his anger and frustration with Obi-Wan, but instead of seeking forgiveness, he's just like, I'm going to go kill it. You know, I'll take out Obi-Wan, and then I'll know he's gone, so I don't have to think about it anymore, which of course is not going to work. That's not the recipe for hope or closure or anything, but he's Darth Maul, so.
Yeah, that's actually really funny, because I was actually talking about that this morning with my dad, because I do have a fear of flying. I don't like flying at all. And we were talking about how, like, there was some news story about, like, a 19-hour flight, and I actually said this morning, huh, that's a way for me to get over my fear of flying, being stuck on a plane for 19 hours. That's funny, because I was just talking about that this morning.
Or you're going to be a mess when you hit the ground, but,
I'd be a mess. There's also like multiple points there, because like Ezra gets it too, because we know that Luke is hope. Like Luke is the hope of the future of the franchise. Like he is the hope. He is a new hope. He is a new hope. But there's also like a double there for Ezra side too. Like he sees hope through Luke, not knowing it's Luke, but it's also the key to destroying the Sith, which is what Ezra was looking for. He's looking for the key to destroying the Sith, which we also know is Luke. So that moment's so interesting, because there's so many different layers that, like, Ezra and Maul are both seeing the exact same thing. They're both seeing hope, and they're both seeing the key to destroying the Sith, but they're also completely not really understanding what any of this means. I kind of wish I looked this up, too. Doesn't, when Maul is dying with Obi-Wan, he says, is the boy the key, or is the boy hope? Or he says something like that as he's dying to Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan's like, yes, he is. And that's when Maul dies, knowing that there's hope, I think. Oh my God, it's been so long since I've seen Twin Sons. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Maybe Maul wanted to take out Obi-Wan so he could grab Luke. Maybe Maul was hoping that he was going to go there, take out Obi-Wan, and then move on to Luke, and that's why he said it.
Yeah, so maybe. I kind of wish I saw that scene with Twin Sons now. I'm going to make a note here to try and remember this for Twin Sons when
we're headed
there.
That way. Yeah, we're headed in that direction. So,
but I know me, and I know I'm going to forget. So, yeah. I know I'm going to forget. But that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to score it up.
Score this puppy up, Chris.
All right, well, we got a new thing now.
Take
with
the puppy
Bender
out
Beam.
Of the ground, let it out of the plastic wrap and score it.
Pull the plastic wrap open, it gasps for breath, and then because it's a puppy, it forgives you instantly and jumps up on your lap, licking your face. All right, I
got real morbid with this puppy metaphor.
Bender's my new Greavy, so if Bender's in an episode, it's always going to get a power boost. This one would have probably been a 7.5, like, average, like, episodic episode, decent episodic episode, some nice visuals. But I'm giving it an 8 because Bender's in it, so he bumps it up a half point. He's automatically a half point bump up from this point on, and sometimes he might be more than a half point depending on which episode it is. But, yeah. So 8 out of 10.
Man, if not
for Bendu enhanced. Bendu enhanced score. BES.
If not for the Bendu, we would have been right on point with each other. So.
I see that.
Yeah, we would have been right on it. Actually, Bendu is what kept this from being a 7 for me. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I got a Bendu boost too.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good episode, but it's just not grabbing me as much as some of the other ones. The writing's just so weird. It's just not as tight, and it's not as on point. And there's just like little kind of strange things. Like I liked what you said about editing. It feels like something was missing from editing.
It sounded like it got rejiggered a little bit.
Yeah, just here and there. I still like the episode. Like Bindu is so great, and I'm really enjoying him the second time around.
Yeah. Not only is he a great character and great vocal acting in it, but he's visually just awesome looking. He's a very Star Wars looking creature, and he's just great as a giant. We haven't had a giant talking creature yet, and he's perfect.
I almost noted that, because last time we saw Bindu, it was like sunset-y, and now we're seeing him under moonlight, and he just looks so good no matter what lighting they put him on. I like the moonlighting on him, because it actually really makes his eyes shine a little bit more. And so, yeah, like, he just looks great, too. And I really like the real danger and fear of Maul being with the Space family, because the Space family is not cut out to deal with Maul. So, like, there was a really real danger there. And there's a lot of really good emotional payoff with Ezra and Kanan making up, too. I really like that storyline. So, I mean, it's a nice episode. It's really pretty to look at, and I like Bindu and stuff. But there's just something a little off about this episode. So I gave it a 7.5 out of 10. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from Facebook and from Twitter, and it's for our episode for The Honorable Ones. So take it away, Chris.
All right. The first one comes from Aaron Henley, and he says, the first real deep dive in what it means to serve in the Empire versus the Republic. In the Clone Wars, each clone and soldier was treated as an individual, well, depending on who it was treating them. Now you're just another cog in a machine that doesn't care if you live or die. One of my favorite episodes of Rebels. And yes, and we're starting to see a little bit of that in Resistance, too.
Yeah.
Not as much where she's perceiving it, but where they're just like, yeah, you know, yeah, she might still have some feelings for a friend. We'll use her. Yeah, yeah. She's still useful for us. So that's...
I was just going to say, like, since watching this this episode and stuff like that, I've actually recently read Lost Stars. And Lost Stars is amazing. If you're going to read any book canons, Chris, I think you would really like Lost Stars, because it follows the original trilogy. And it's these two characters that kind of, like, are going through the original trilogy timeline. And the whole premise is, like, they're childhood friends, they love each other, but one is with the Rebels and one is with the Empire. So it's a romance, but it's interesting because, like, it's just running along, and it really deep dives into the Empire as well. Like, what happens if you had a friend on the Death Star? Like, how do you react to that? And what happens if you had a friend from Alderaan? Like, one of the most interesting characters in Lost Stars is a character named Nash. And he's from Alderaan, and he watches his planet explode. It's actually what I want from Cass.
I was going to say, what if you were a stormtrooper from Alderaan on the Death Star?
He's an Imperial officer from Alderaan, and he is just fascinating because he's having to have to, like, reconcile that the Empire did this to his planet. And I think you would actually really enjoy Lost Stars. But yeah, like, between Honorable Ones is like one of the first visual medias we have that. Lost Stars actually came out before Honorable Ones, and now that I've read it, I'm just like, yes, it's so good. But I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, no, that's all I had to say.
Well, let's hear what Mike Zumo has to say.
Yes. Mike Zumo writes in, I wasn't a huge fan of Rebels, but this was an amazing, all caps, episode. And it's got to be an amazing episode if it gets Mike Zumo to write in.
Yeah.
Saying that it is. He's a hard sell, man.
And the next one is from Paul C. Kelly, because Paul C. Kelly has taken to Twitter writing comments on Twitter. So these are all Paul C. Kelly.
I just love the term taken to Twitter.
Yeah, he's taken to Twitter, not
Paul
Facebook,
C. Kelly so. Is taken to Twitter in a froth. All right, we got one from Paul C. Kelly.
Yeah, these were actually three different tweets, and I just compiled them all together, so.
We got three tweets from Paul C. Kelly.
Tweet, tweet, tweet.
Tweet, yeah. Tweet, tweet.
Yeah.
It was great seeing how much of a spaz Kallus becomes when he loses control of the situation. Oh, yeah. More random thoughts from this episode? When the Chickasaurus attacks, the music is very similar to when the Rancor attacks Luke in Return of the Jedi. Oh, yeah, yeah. That scene is very similar, too. It's in a cave and everything. So, yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Your discussion about comparing this episode to one with Dooku chained to Obi-Wan and Anakin reminded me of the He-Man episode, Evil Seed. Ew, wow. I don't know if I wanted to see the episode about He-Man's evil seed. I think I saw that on the internet, but I don't think it was an official canon He-Man episode, if you know what I mean. That episode, Evil Seed, tries to take over Eternia, and it forces the Skeletor to team up with He-Man to stop the madness. Oh, yeah. Stop the madness. Stop the Evil Seed madness. Oh, God. Now I got to go see if there is a He-Man evil. Oh, man. I know it's going to be gay porn, too. It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Any He-Man porn out there. Well. Hang on, I gotta write that down. Side project He-Man poor. there's She-Ra. She-Ra could be in it too, but then I want to see how they handled Skeletor. Is He-Man the one with that little floating wizard creature too?
I think so. Ooh. I've been watching the new run. Oh my god, half my candy is open. I'm trying to repackage it all.
Oh yes. Oh, that's next is the candy. We didn't pick out our candy today.
Half my candy is open. Why is it open? It's just these two of the wrappers kind of came unwrapped.
I'm grabbing my box of candy and I'm...
Well, can we do either the Gavotes or the Milkas? Because both of them have popped open on me.
Let's do the Milka because it's right on top. And
okay,
it's...
I'm going to put the Galvotes off to the side for tomorrow then. It's a gold packaging since we're recording tomorrow. Because mine's open and I want to eat it faster, sooner rather than later.
Oh, okay, yeah, mine is too. Yep.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it had really good packaging, so. Not your fault, Dario. By the way, if you don't know what we're doing, our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review because Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's weird. And this week, we're doing the Milka Roundest coming from Switzerland. How the fuck does this open?
It's a silver disc. I think you have to tear off the wrapper on the back, which actually has a freshness date on it, which is November of 2019. November 11th. So I think we have to tear that off.
What a bitch. I cannot get this thing to open.
You gotta take the paper wrapper off it.
I'm trying to. It's coming off in smidgens.
Oh.
Okay, it's the first.
Mine opened right. Oh, it looks wafery. I thought it was gonna be a lump of chocolate because it looked like the Mexican hot chocolate that you can get. But
it is wafery.
I see the shape of a wafer in the bottom of it.
It's wafery.
Oh,
oh my
yeah.
God! Oh god.
So it's like a.
It was worth fighting
like
for.
Like a Kit Kat cookie.
Oh my god, it was worth fighting for. Switzerland, your packaging.
It is basically a Kit Kat in cookie form.
Switzerland, cookie your shape. Packaging sucks, but this is so good.
It is good.
Oh my god.
Has that kind of like richness chocolate to it.
Oh. Four stars on the Milka.
I will give it 3.75 because the packaging was a bitch.
I had no problem with the packaging, so. Four
I'm
stars.
I'm just lucky, I guess. Thank you, Dario. We love you. Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else?
I did not.
All right. Well, Chris, where can people find you?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That is our website, which you'll find on the World Wide Web. There we have all our podcasts that we post and all our podcasters. That's where we call it home. And you can go there, subscribe to any of our podcasts, RSS feeds, including this one. Or you can even sign up for the master podcast feed where you get every Tutu Freaks episode, which means you'll be listening to podcasts constantly, like Gene, the podcasting machine. Gene. That's the pre-one. We'll get to the proper one in a couple seconds here. But
I smacked my mic.
You can also subscribe to our RSS feeds off of the iTunes. We got all our podcasts out of the iTunes. And you can go to Facebook and go to the Two True Freaks podcast, and that will also list all of our podcasts. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, where you can go to hang out and chat. That's also on Facebook and on Twitter. We also release all our episodes, and Our Twitter feed is run by the legendary and aforementioned Gene Gene, the podcasting machine. That's the slow version anyway, because Gene's listening to this at 1.75 speed or something like that, or double speed.
I'm just finishing up my milk, so.
Well, it's a good thing, because that's all I got for where you can find me. What can they find you, Hope? With a mouthful of Milka.
Okay, there we go. All right, there we go. I'm good now. Hi. I was like, eat faster, but savor it. Savor the eating of the faster.
Milka would be a even more dunkable version of like a Kit Kat. You could maybe that's why they call it Milka. Maybe you're supposed to dunk this, but take a bite out of it and then dunk it in your milk.
I don't know, but it was delicious. So normally I share my candy, but I was just like, no, I'm eating all of this. You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. You can also find my website at geekygirlexperience.com. I've actually been writing a lot of posts about Resistance. I've moved my instant reactions for the Resistance episodes over to Geeky Girl Experience because Tumblr's just been really stupid. But I've also been writing a couple reviews and stuff like here. I wrote a little article about how impressed I am with how mature Toradosa is. I also wrote a post. It was all speculation, so let me throw this out now. It's a speculation post of what would happen if, like, Hype died. Hype Faison, which is a character in Resistance. And I think he would be a very interesting choice if he died, because on one hand, everybody on the Colossus likes Hype. So if he died protecting the Colossus, could be a rallying point for the people. But I also think he'd be an interesting choice for Tam's character, because Tam never forgave him. And Tam would then lose a friend who she held her anger against, and she never had the chance to forgive Hype from their past. So I wrote an article about like why it would be interesting if anybody had to die in Resistance. I think Hype would be a great choice to die. So yeah, you can find all that at geekgirlexperience.com. I also write fan fiction on an archive of our own under the name Chaos Lydia, and those stories are Forces of Gravity and The Lucky Leku, which I need to start working on episode 2 for the podfic. But anyway, yeah. Oh, next week.
Well, we'll be back next week, except Hope and I will actually be back together tomorrow because we're recording our next episode the next day, so.
Yeah, we took last week off because we were both a little brain dead, so now we're doubling up this week, which means I need to start working on the outline because it's 3:00 and I need to write that and still watch Resistance and still watch my Resistance recap and go fold clothes and take a shower and cook dinner.
Ooh.
So I'm going to go ahead and go because I got a busy day. Bye, guys.
See you next week.
Come back next week for Wedge.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sock it to me?